All right, let's do this. Let's really do this. This is Listen Closely with John and Chris. I'm John out here on the East Coast, and I'm joined 3 hours behind on the West Coast by Chris. Hello, Chris.
Hello, John.
How are you?
I am well. It's a beautiful 88 degrees and sunny out here in Vancouver, Washington, believe it or not.
My Lord, 88.
88, yeah.
It
I heard you guys got snow yesterday.
I mean, not a substantial amount, but no, I mean,
Right.
it was definitely a little bizarre.
Yeah.
It was a strange weekend, to say the least.
It's been a strange year.
Strange year, strange weekend. I mean, imagine my surprise of putting on this new HBO series called I Know This Much Is True, and it ends up not being a 6-part miniseries about Spandau Ballet. So I, combine that with the snow on Saturday, it just made for a very strange weekend. But
Understood.
it was a very interesting week for the Listen Closely podcast because we are now on something like 10 different podcast sites, and perhaps the biggest, the most known one is Spotify. So for those eight listeners now, you can access our entire archive of now, what, seven podcasts on Spotify, on Breaker, on Google Music, on iTunes, and several others that I've never even heard of.
We may not have enough listeners to go to each of the podcast sites, actually. I think we have more podcast sites than we have listeners.
We do. I didn't even know
Yeah.
all these podcast sites existed, but I do now. And I guess I'll work on compiling a comprehensive list for our fans.
That's right. That's right.
But
Well,
more
we're it,
importantly,
yeah.
regarding tonight's podcast, before I hand it over to you, I have one question I want to know, and this is very important for tonight. Are you wearing your red headband right now?
Of course I am. Of course I am. How could you not if we're going to do this album?
All right. Well, then that's all I needed to know. I'll turn it over to you then.
All right. Well, we are going to do a great album from 1985. One of the albums that really made the CD become what it was. It was recorded digitally in the UK by the great band Dire Straits and their lead man Mark Knopfler. We're going to look at Brothers in Arms.
Hell of an album.
Hell of an album, yeah. Do you have any first impressions, as before we dig deep into this?
Yeah, I mean, there's a few things before we do the deep dive. I'll say this much. Our timing is impeccable because we are almost exactly to the day of the 35th anniversary of the release of this album, which was May 13th, 1985.
Wow.
And yeah, how's that for timing, right?
That's perfect.
And look, I've always been a big Knopfler fan. I think Knopfler is phenomenal. And I think the success of this album is really a testament to Mark Knopfler and to his talents and to Dire Straits, their talents in general, because these are not your these are very unlikely MTV superstars. This album comes out in the spring of 85. MTV is at its peak, really. And if you look at who the other artists were that were all over MTV at that time, Madonna, Duran Duran, George Michael, when he was still with Wham, they're young, they're attractive. And then you have Dire Straits,
What are you
arguably
saying? What are you saying about Mark Knopfler?
the homeliest group of dudes
Oh, come on,
ever.
man.
Oh, seriously, though. I mean, come on. L listen to me. They are not a good-looking group of people. And they're a little bit older than, they're a good 10 years older than Madonna, U2, Duran Duran. Knopfler is approaching like midlife crisis age, and he becomes an MTV superstar in 1985, 1986. And again, some of it has to do with maybe the videos themselves, but just damn good songs. And he's always been one of my favorite guitarists. I just love his style of playing. I find it much less invasive than Eddie Van Halen, who's a genius at playing guitar, but I think there's just a more atmospheric, soothing sound to Knopfler, and I think it's evident on this album. And that's really all I have to say before we do the deep dive.
Absolutely. Just to piggyback on that, I mean, Knopfler's guitar, it sort of sneaks up on you, the brilliance of it. You know, it doesn't hit you over the head. And I think that's what's so fantastic about it. He doesn't have the need to, I mean, he can put down a powerful solo for sure, but he doesn't always have to. I think that's some of his genius.
It's a very nuanced approach, I think, to guitar virtuosity.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And one, you know, you had told me something very interesting about Knopfler when we were talking about this earlier. His early career. Why don't you talk a little bit about that before he was?
I read somewhere that much like you, Knopfler started out writing. He was a journalist. He was basically covering local stories for a small town local newspaper in England or in Scotland. Because I believe he's Scottish by birth, somewhere in the United Kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's very telling because his songs always tell very interesting, well-detailed stories.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I feel like on this album, we've got kind of a mix. There's a lot of love songs, but then you get a trio of songs that are really war songs. You know, if you look at The Man's Too Strong, Right Across the River, Brothers in Arms, I mean, these have heavy, you know, guys in battle. And the title of the album, Brothers in Arms, you know, is sort of a military reference. But he tells some stories that maybe not every songwriter could tell, you know, kind of getting into that realm. So I agree with you there. I think it's very telling, his former career. What for you, if anything, stands out as the low point, the nadir of this album?
For me, and you might find this surprising, I didn't even have to think twice about this.
I think I know what you're going to say. I think I know what you're going
to say. What do you think I'm going to say?
You're going to go with Walk of Life.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think Walk of Life is cheesy, out of place. You know, I liked Walk of Life a lot as a child when the album came out, but I was also like 7 or 8 years old. And but I think I liked it at the time, Chris, mostly because, do you remember the music video?
Of course, the video.
And it was like baseball bloopers, and it was dudes colliding head on, going for the same pop-up fly in the outfield. But come on, man, like Knopfler watched baseball?
Well, it was all sports. I mean, I don't know if you watched football, but it had a variety of sports in it.
It did have some football. It did have some basketball. I'm not going to lie. In preparation for this episode, I watched the video and I cringed as I watched it. But I just find the whole thing to be, you know, the synthesizer sounds like it's the guy playing at a minor league baseball park. And maybe that's intentional. That awful shot in the beginning of the video where Knopfler's suiting up in like the red outfit with the white leather boots.
Oh, wow. I don't even remember that. Jeez.
Yeah. You watch this and you go, no wonder why people really make fun of 80s music. it's arguably my favorite era for music. But I think, in my opinion, Walk of Life really is just it's weak. It's very weak. But I'm curious, what did you go with as your nadir?
Well, I did not go with Walk of Life. I understand that it does not hold up as well as almost all of the rest of this album, but I just have such a soft spot for that. I think maybe you don't like that as much because you weren't as much into sports as me.
here's the thing. When I was 7 or 8, I was really into sports.
Hmm.
And I was really into the video. I used to laugh at it because you remember watching, and, you know, like you, I grew up a Boston Red Sox fan. Mm-hmm. And those were some lean years in the 1980s. Anytime there was a rain delay, they would either show Mr. Belvedere reruns or MASH, or they would show like This Week in Baseball.
Yeah.
And you always waited for the compilation reel where it was just the guys crashing into each other.
Yeah.
And so I think I used to really love watching MTV as a kid and waiting for Walk of Life to come on just because it was that same sort of sensation. But looking at it now, no, it does nothing for me. Your sports remark, okay, maybe you're right. But I don't know. I'm curious, though, to hear what you ultimately went with.
Well, I went with One World, the penultimate track. You know, not a terrible song. I don't think there are any terrible songs on this album, but you know, it's kind of forgettable for me. You know, talking about finding a way to live in one world and harmony, you know,
it's very cliche,
very cliche. And, for me, it's one that it just has no staying power to me. You know, almost every song on this album has something that kind of lingers with me. That one just goes in one ear out the other. So that's what I would go with. Walk of Life.
You think One World is worse than Walk of Life?
I do. Walk of Life still, it's this infectious, upbeat song. I understand what you're saying. And some of this may be a sentimental pick for me, but I don't know. It's okay, still got it for me.
Yeah, but okay, just hear me out on this for a moment here. And I'm not here to change your mind, but I love Knopfler's lyrics. I think his lyrics are on par with his guitar playing. But come on, man. Here comes Johnny singing Oldies Goldies. Bebop-a-lua, baby, what I say. Here comes Johnny singing I Got a Woman down in the tunnels trying to make it pay. He got the action. He got the motion. Oh, yeah, the boy can play. I mean, really? Seriously?
it's a throwback. It's kind of an old, you know, bluesy, jazzy tune here. I don't know. I don't know what you want me to tell you here.
Again, I'm not going to change your mind. I think the song you chose for the Nadir is not a very good song. I agree. For my money, Walk of Life is worse. And I think that Dire Straits probably alienated a lot of their long-term fans with Walk of Life.
They probably did. And maybe if that song comes out when I'm not 8 years old, I don't feel the same way. But for me, it's just hard to separate the 8-year-old listening to that song and wanting to get up and dance from today.
I could see how that would resonate more with an 8-year-old than your latest trick would. but then again, I was a strange child. So, you know, we'll get to that in a little bit. But
it's true. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I still find it infectious. And maybe some of that is probably a lot of it is nostalgia. But if it comes on the radio, I will listen to it.
I'm not even going to respond to that. Okay.
Wow. Wow. This is, you know, 35 years. This may be the one of the biggest arguments we've gotten into.
I think really it's this and Procol Harum's Whiter Shade of Pale, which I think is a masterpiece, and you think it's just, you know,
don't get
obnoxious
me started on
rubbish.
That. Don't get me started
on
that.
We'll devote an entire episode to that.
Right. Now back to this. What Brothers in Arms, what'd you go with for your sleeper moment? This is the moment that, you know, maybe every time it doesn't catch you, but once it kind of sneaks up on you, and once in a while it just grabs you and you say, wow, that is better than I thought.
Well, yeah, and this is interesting because I gave the album a full listen several times this week, and perhaps it's the circumstances in which we're living in right now, but the sleeper moment that really snuck up on me and really resonated with me listening to it several times this week, is the song Why Worry? Mm. And I think it, you know, it's sort of the perfect narrative for what we're living through right now. The lyrics, why worry? There should be laughter after pain. There should be sunshine after rain. These things have always been the same. So why worry now? And it should be said, he co-wrote the song with Emmylou Harris. But it's a very simple melody. I think, of course, what I said about the lyrics, they really resonated with me. And I think it really just showcases Knopfler's guitar virtuosity.
Mm.
So that's my two cents.
Yeah.
Now, I'm curious to know what you went with as your sleeper moment.
Yeah, the kicking and fighting is over because I went with the same thing. I went with Why Worry.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, my Lord.
It's a beautiful song. It's a beautiful song. It's one that if you're not paying attention, it can kind of pass you over because it's a very quiet song. But it's beautiful. It's beautiful in its simplicity. You know, that passage that you just read was, I was going to read that. And because it's,
no, I'm sorry.
It's all right. It's all right. But yeah, it's great. It really, it's very atmospheric too. The synth and the keyboards on this, you know, that little towards the end, there's about a minute and a half of just, musical outro. Can you have an outro? Is that a thing? Like instead of an intro?
All right. Sure.
Coda. A coda. Yeah. Whether you just get that little it's really beautiful.
Which you made it sound like the Deliverance theme just now. Yeah, that was nice.
That's a different thing. Yeah, I think it's just a beautiful song. It's beautiful, it's simple, and it sneaks up on you. So I think it's a perfect sleeper song.
We are in agreement. Yeah. After that nasty exchange, about Walk of Life,
which almost ended
everything's simpatico again. That's wonderful.
Now let's see what you got for your zenith. What's your high point in this album?
Oof. So this was a tough one, because there's what, 9 songs on the album, I think, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I was torn between 3 of them for my zenith, and. You know, So Far Away, which is the lead-off song, the first song in the album, that's probably the song I listen to the most.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when it comes on the radio or when I'm out shopping and I hear it at, you know, the supermarket or something, I'm very happy hearing it. And then the title track, Brothers in Arms, I think, for all intents and purposes, is probably the best song on the album.
Mm.
But in the end, I had to go with my personal favorite, which is Your Latest Trick, which it's a daring song because it doesn't sound like Dire Straits at all. It sounds more like something that should have been on a Sade album.
it does.
But it's true. You know, it's kind of the lyrics are incredible. And I think Knopfler's storytelling really is at the center of this song. And what's pretty cool with it for me is that, you know, I've mentioned a few times his guitar chops. They kind of take a back seat, which is rare for a Dire Straits song.
Mm.
He's sort of just filling in the blanks in the background playing guitar. But my God, that sax solo.
Mm.
In the beginning. I mean, it could be one of the, if not the most identifiable sax riffs in rock history.
Mm.
And, you know, whoever it was that played that sax riff, I'm willing to bet he must have gotten laid a whole boatload of times in the 80s just by telling women. Like, you know, it's such a sultry sax sound. And I had this vision listening to the song about 30 times this week. That it's, you know, 1986, it's Little Rock, Arkansas, and it's late on a hot night, and then Arkansas Governor Bill Clinton is sitting in the governor's mansion, and he's probably thinking, I need to play the sax again so I could score some tail like the fellas from the Dire Straits. Like, I swear, that's probably what got Bubba up and playing the sax again on Arsenio Hall. That song really put the sax back on the map as far as I'm concerned.
Michael Brecker is the gentleman who played the sax solo there.
And if I'm not mistaken, he is no longer with us.
He is, yes, sadly passed away in 2007. But he won.
May he rest in peace.
He was a composer and a performer. He won something like 15 Grammys. I mean, he was a guy, you might not know his name, you know, most people, but he was a big deal. And that was a phenomenal solo. Yeah.
Incredible. And it's really not so much a solo as it's just kind of the intro.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Incredible. No, that's and just great song. Great song.
Yeah, that's a great pick.
But what did you go with?
Well, for me, you hit the nail on the head with the three best songs on the album. So Far Away, Your Latest Trick, Brothers in Arms. For me, I went with something different. I didn't go with the song.
You went with the headband.
The red headband, yes. No, I went with the, I'm going to call it the sonic landscape of this album.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the atmospheric conditions. This song, there's a lot of keyboard.
It's like, are you a meteorologist?
I wish. I could be wrong all the time and still
that's right. Up.
No, this song has such an atmosphere to it. You know, you put it on and it just sort of takes you away. You even look at the, even the album cover, you know, the album cover is the sky blue with kind of pink clouds and this guitar floating off into it. It's this peaceful, it's very serene. And that's the sound of this album. There's so much from the 80s that, you know, you point to Walk of Life that is cheesy. And, you know, that synth pop that doesn't have legs, that doesn't have longevity, stand the test of time. The synth on this, combined with the electric guitar and just everything that they're doing here, it makes this world where it's very expansive. And it's this great mood music that is not in any way cheesy on the synth, I think, except for maybe little bits here and there. But do you know what I mean?
Walk of Life.
Do you know what I mean, though? It creates this really melodic, beautiful soundscape. And I think a lot of that has come back today with some of the artists you hear. You know, if you listen to somebody like Frank Ocean, even like Billie Eilish,
I thought you were going to say Billy Ocean. I got really excited there for a minute.
But there's a lot of this 80s type of sound coming back today. Not the super cheesy stuff, but the stuff like this, I think, that had staying power, that real sort of dreamlike, atmospheric, beautiful sound.
Atmospheric, well-produced, yeah. And I think, you know, I agree with you 100% on this. And I think there's a lot of crossover in the mid 80s with certain artists playing on each other's albums. Mm. And they all kind of have this lush atmospheric thing going for it. And I think you could say similarly, Pink Floyd's 1987 Momentary Lapse of Reason, which is just not necessarily a great Pink Floyd album, but a great sounding album. And then Brian Ferry's first post Roxy Music album in 1985, Boys and Girls, which also features Mark Knopfler on guitar and Dave Gilmour from Pink Floyd on guitar. So there's crossover, and there's a lot of similarity.
Guy Fletcher from Dire Straits as well.
Who is keyboardist,
yeah,
correct?
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, I think, you know, I feel like when the synthesizer and the electronic keyboards got real big in the 80s, you know, it was new, and I think a lot of people just started doing whatever they could with them. It was sort of like not even thinking, is this really good? It's just like, wow, we can do this, which lent itself to some cheesy stuff that doesn't really stand the test of time. But Dire Straits, I think they got it, and they saw what was good about the keyboard, and what was bad about it. And they were able to really harness it in the right way, I think.
I agree. It makes for an amazing listening experience all these years
later. Absolutely. Do you think this album captures the zeitgeist of the time, 1985?
Oh my God, yeah. Yeah, it, for as beautifully produced and atmospheric as you said it is, it at times very much sounds like 1985. It smells like 1985. And, you know, I mean this in a good way. I think the phrase that would get thrown around in regard to this album was yuppie rock.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? That may be so, but so what? As I said earlier, Knopfler's a bit older than the new wave and pop star upstarts of 1985. And so there is a more mature, refined sound. And I think it does perfectly capture it. What do you feel?
Yeah, I think so. I think, and to call this mature and refined, I think is really smart observation. That's, it's sort of a level above a lot of other, you know, 80s music that might kind of be lumped in this genre.
You know, though, ironically, the British press massacre the album upon its release for this exact reason. Yeah. New Musical Express, who really is Britain's answer to Rolling Stone magazine, attacks what they called Knopfler's mawkish self-pity, his mannered appropriation of rock and Americana, his thumpingly crass attempts at wit. And the now defunct British publication Record Mirror said the album is full of West Coast guitars reeking of megabucks and sellout stadium concerts throughout the globe.
Wow. Overly harsh to me. Incredibly overly harsh. Yeah, I will say the one thing in there that stands out to me, there's a lot of pop in the 80s, pop rock. These guys were a little obsessed with like the Wild West, I think. In this you get songs like The Man's Too Strong and Right Across the River. You know, when we did No Jacket Required with Phil Collins, you got Billy, Don't You Lose My Number, which has this real Wild West feel to it. Yeah, I don't know. What was it with that? Feels like there's a lot of those songs.
I think because they're British, I think they're you know, they're from the UK.
Yeah.
I think it's that outsider's fascination with the Wild West. It's the same thing in the 1960s with the spaghetti Western. Mm. I mean, why the hell were Italians making Westerns with washed up American TV stars?
Right.
You know, but it became a cultural phenomenon. And I, you know, you think of the Sergio Leone films of the 1960s, Fistful of Dollars, Once Upon a Time in the West. You know, maybe it's the same thing. It's this outsider's fascination with a foreign landscape in a bygone era.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right. And I can see how the critics would sort of view it as, especially with the kind of war references on this album, to be like, oh, you're, look at this guy, or, you know, he's going over, he's like putting on the cowboy hat. He's trying to play cowboy here. But to me, he does a really good job of it. They do a really good job of it. I mean, The Man's Too Strong, which has a real Western feel to it. I think it's a great song. It's got that great guitar hook.
And Knopfler, it should be said, is a country music fan. He co-writes a song with Emmylou Harris on the album. I think he did an entire album, a solo album with Chet Atkins. Mm. He really is influenced by American old school country Western and bluegrass sounds. So it's not simply thematically, but I think it's the overall sound of the album.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think you're right. I think it does capture the zeitgeist. You know, what about for you? Any personal memories that go with this one, or any you know, cultural references?
Yeah, I was thinking long and hard about this, and you know, there are a few personal memories, but for me, it's the cultural moment, and it's something I recently discovered, and I think I shared this with you a few months ago. You know, when you have a lot of time on your hands, as we do these days, and you surf the web finding random things. There was a Japanese television series in the 1990s called File of Justice, which is basically like the Japanese equivalent of Law and Order. And you can go on YouTube and watch the opening credit sequence, the theme. And it's basically, it is the saxophone to Your Latest Trick, but they stretch it out into a 90-second montage, and the most bizarre imagery, you know, they'll cut to like courtroom scenes in Japan where they wear the wigs like the barristers in England do. And then they'll cut to like a woman getting run over by a car in front of her family and like the husband screaming. And then there's like a lurid sex scene, but you know, the Japanese, they're not showing too much. What made producers in 1996 sitting around going, you know, what are we going to use for our theme song? Should we commission, you know, the top Japanese musician of the day to write something for a File of Justice? And, you know, does one of the showrunners just go, no, I want Dire Straits. You're going to do Money for Nothing? No. Your Latest Trick. What made them think of this?
I don't know, but you did send that to me, and it was, it's brilliant. I mean, it's just so insane.
What about you? Cultural moments?
I would cite Walk of Life.
Or a memoir?
Walk of Life video, but I don't think we want to go down that road. Now, you watched the show The Americans, but you did not finish it, right?
I did not finish it. I watched season one.
So I watched the whole thing. It's one of my favorite shows of all time. And the song Brothers in Arms plays in the final season. I'm not going to give away too much here, but at an incredibly key moment. And it is such a fantastic scene. It's the perfect song for that moment. And I will sometimes just hop on YouTube and go watch that, because it still gives me chills, you know, even what are we, a year or two out from when the finale was.
Wow. It also was in a very pivotal moment in, I think, season two of Miami Vice.
Was it?
If I'm not mistaken.
The
I believe
Vice had
so.
All the hits, man.
Well, that's what Miami, the working title for the show when it was in pre-production was called MTV Cops.
Is that right?
Yeah, they didn't know what to call it, but they wanted it to, you know, really showcase the big hot music of the day. What I find interesting is we've just spent 30 minutes plus talking about Dire Straits' Brothers in Arms. We have not once mentioned the big hit off the album.
That's fascinating, isn't it? Money for Nothing. Yeah, I mean, that was huge. Yeah. And it's a good song. To me, it maybe is a little more dated than the other, you know, three big ones that we talked about. But that was huge back in the day. And the video.
Huge.
The video, I mean, that huge song, and I still like it, but to me, it just doesn't quite have the depth of those other three, Brothers in Arms, So Far Away, and Your Latest Trick.
Yeah. Agreed.
Final question. Perfect album?
No. Excellent album, in my opinion, but I do not think it's a perfect album, but I thoroughly enjoy listening to it.
Agreed. Yeah, I think it doesn't quite have the cohesion. Maybe it does sound wise, but I think the songs, you know, they kind of jump around a little bit in terms of, you know, you get these sort of quasi war songs, and then you're just getting things like Walk of Life and Money for Nothing. It's but fantastic album, one of the best from that era, and anyone out there listening should give it a listen if you haven't.
I agree 100%. And I think that's all the time we have. I've got to go install microwave ovens and custom kitchen deliveries. And I got to go move these color
TVs.
That's
right. I'm going to go watch the Walk of Life video. And
yeah, let me know how that goes for you.
All right. Well,
all right, gang.
We'll be
thanks
back
for
next
listening.
Week. You take care, John.
Absolutely.